I'm Evan Applegate. I'm a cartographer, and on Very Expensive Maps, I talk to better cartographers. This week, you'll hear from Lee France, one of the rare cartographers who can make beautiful maps in both print and digital interactive formats. He has mapped for National Geographic's Trails Illustrated Group, Gaia GPS, and he's now Senior Manager of Technical Cartography at OnX Maps.
My name's Lee France. I live in Sandpoint, Idaho, and I'm a cartographer for OnX Maps.
How'd you get your start in maps?
It happened kind of right after college, I'd say. I had gotten a degree in GIS, of all things, from Northern Arizona University. Didn't have a lot of cartography experience in my education. I was looking to travel, and I found an internship down in southern Chile looking for a cartographic technician to help build topographic maps for an adventure race through Chile and Patagonia. So that just seemed like it was almost too good to be true, but I applied for it and somehow ended up getting it and went down there and lived for, it was close to a year, kind of over two different times I went down, but spent that time creating topographic maps of the region that were used for navigation during this adventure race. And that was kind of my introduction into cartography in general. And I was like, oh, I didn't even really realize this was an aspect of this whole mapping world that somebody could focus on. And that was kind of really the jumping off point for me, I guess.
When you went into the GIS program, were you hoping to be a land management GIS guy or?
You know, I think I didn't really know. My father was a forester, and I had spent some time going out and like digitizing harvest plots for the company that he worked for. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. I get to be out walking around in the woods, like mapping things. So I think that's what I kind of thought GIS would be. It's rare that that is actually the reality of that career field, but it was, it was what kind of got me going down that path, I guess.
And so you grew up breaking in a bunch of hiking boots.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, it's kind of always been my line of work, has either been working out in the woods, in the field, or creating maps for other people to be doing so.
Okay, so you went down to Chile. Did you stay there after?
It was just an internship, so eventually kind of just ran out of money and couldn't stay forever and needed to get back and come back to reality and start doing something that would pay the bills. I ended up landing at National Geographic. It was kind of through a friend of a friend. I contacted them and I was like, hey, I'm doing this really cool thing down in South America, making maps, and I would love to come and work for you doing the same thing. I was pretty untested at that point, so they were willing to throw me some contract work as a trial run. And I ended up doing that for several months and then ended up coming on full time with the Trails Illustrated Group in Evergreen, Colorado. Ended up working there for several years with the Trails Illustrated maps, doing a lot of the folded print maps that you would buy in REI or regular, like any other outdoor shops. Lots of maps for like national parks or national forests, wilderness areas, things like that, with a pretty heavy like hiking focus. A lot of times it was updating maps that they had already made to get them up to date with changes to the trails, like new data. We worked a lot with the land managing agencies to get their like on the ground expertise for the mapping projects we were doing. And then oftentimes it would be like new areas that they hadn't created a Trails Illustrated map for yet.
Did they ever involve walking around ground truthing?
Not as often as one would hope, but we did do a lot of visits to the sites that we were mapping to meet with local groups and do a little bit of ground truthing for areas that our editor could like hone in on that we should kind of check out and verify.
Were those all heavily style guided by the time you got there? They told you this is exactly how it's going to look, hue to it?
Yeah, Nat Geo had a pretty well-defined specs and symbols at that point for all their maps. So it was kind of, following the guidelines there. And when we would come out with maybe like new products, like while I was there, we started developing the map book series. So there ended up being space for creativity within those new formats as well. There would be like a small book. Every page would be a different map of like a specific hike or a section of a long distance trail or something like that.
Oh, it's like a triptych for walking. Like you flip to a page and when you hit the edge of the page.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Were they a map publisher shop?
Very much so. A lot of map publisher, which was an amazing tool for the kind of work we were doing there.
Were they all at the same scale?
No, the scale definitely varied a lot based on the area we were mapping. We would kind of try to pick the best scale based on, you know, we had a set paper size that we were using for these printed maps. So a lot of times we'd be picking a scale that worked for that with some, you know, room to get creative as far as splitting it between a front and a back. Or oftentimes if it was a huge area like the Bob Marshall Wilderness area in Montana, we would need to split that into two different maps, front and back, just to cover it at a scale that was usable for people out in the field.
Did they buy their own private data for the elevation?
No, most of like the elevation data that we used would have just been what we could find freely from government sources, you know, the national elevation data sets, or occasionally if there was some really like high resolution LiDAR we could find. If it was a very small scale map, we would use something like that.
Did you ever have a total end-to-end map? You're doing it brand new, blank page, and then holding it in your hands like 9 months later.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty common, actually. And it was a very satisfying part of the job to get to the end and have this very like tangible thing that you can hold and be like, all right, this, we went from scraping the internet for good recreation data, elevation data, all those components to this like really well-curated like map that you can hold in your hands.
How long would that take?
Like a brand new project was somewhere in the vein of like 6 months, maybe 3 to 6 months in there. Yeah.
And were they solo projects or did everyone have their hand in people's work?
Most of the time they were solo projects. We had an editor that reviewed everybody's work, but most of the time we were kind of taking ownership of a given map project and obviously like getting feedback from other cartographers on the team.
And how long were you there at Nat Geo Trails?
I was there for about 5 years.
What was next?
So at that time, I just really wanted to move back closer to home in the Northwest. So just started looking for jobs again and ended up at Onyx Maps at that time, shifting my career back more to a GIS focus because that was what they had available. And it was a good avenue to getting back to Montana and closer to home in Idaho. So I went to work for them, initially working with the team that was responsible for processing a lot of the ownership data that they put into their maps, and then eventually transitioned to a focus on trail data, and then starting to do some of the cartographic design work as they made a shift into vector-based map data.
Processing the ownership data, that sounds like a haul. Did they have to buy a lot of private cadastral data and merge it into a layer that says, don't walk here?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good, simple way to put it. Sure. It was definitely a haul. It's an unbelievable amount of work that that team does to find and source ownership data across the country for every county and kind of put it together into, you know, a very like standardized format that can be used in the applications.
I always thought that was such an interesting layer. So much navigation app for outdoor stuff is just, I want to know the elevation, I want to know the land cover.
Yeah.
And in the best case, where I can shelter, where I can get water, where I can find a parking lot. But if you're hunting and there's a lot of, you know, strict laws about what you can take and where and also trespass.
Yeah.
I'm out in the middle of nowhere. I'm never going to see the surveyor's marker. So I need to know, am I trespassing right now? Is someone going to shoot me in the Mountain West?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's why it was fairly revolutionary at the time. There weren't really many other options out there for being able to carry around this device in your hand and know exactly like whose land you're standing on. So that's really where they got their start and what's kind of accelerated them to where they're at now.
So at this point, you were already a pretty seasoned print cartographer. When did you start making the stuff you could, you know, slip around with your finger on?
I spent a few years at Onyx at that time, and then Gaia GPS was hiring for a cartographer. And I, you know, it had always been my passion to be focused on cartography. So I ended up going to work for them. They were also one of the few companies at that time that was already doing remote. So this was pre-pandemic, and that opened up the opportunity for my family and I to move back home here to Sandpoint. So yeah, I got back into the full focus on cartography in this new, you know, vector tile based slippy map world, which was somewhat new. You know, most of my cartographic experience at that time was coming from print. And so this was like adapting to new technologies and, you know, a new medium for doing map design.
What was that transition like for you?
It was relatively smooth. I think I was in the right place because, you know, I was working for a company that was making a product that was focused on outdoor recreation, you know, particularly like backpacking and hiking at that time. And that was so much of what I had done at National Geographic. So was able to really take a lot of those design principles and try to apply them to this new medium. And even though the tools and the, you know, the options for the cartographic styling were very different than working in Adobe Illustrator, it was really kind of fun to try to achieve a lot of those paper map elements in this new slippy map digital space for something that was covering the entire globe.
Operating by rules enforced at 16 zoom levels instead of getting to fidget pixel by pixel.
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, can be very challenging as a cartographer. It's like you need to let go of some of that degree of perfection and ultimately really try to hone in on the audience or the user, the map that you're designing for.
At this point, did you set the style guide?
Yep. So this was kind of brand new. Like they hadn't had anybody doing style work yet. So I was kind of brought in to really start to define the look and feel of Gaia maps at that time.
How do you create the Gaia cartographic layer that you were responsible for?
There's this term going around now, I think, that Stayman Designs maybe coined it, called full stack cartography. And that was, at the time, I didn't realize that's what I was doing, but it was very much what I was doing, where you maybe have, you know, a desired look or a cartographic element that you're going for, and you have to reverse engineer that way back through the entire stack of the map. So, all the way down to like writing code that would manipulate the map tiles so that you could get the right attribution or geometry in those map tiles to achieve the look that you're going for on the map.
Would you start with these colors? I want it to look like this with these typefaces, and then think what technology would enable me to get there?
Yeah, we relied heavily on Maputnik, which was an open source editor that was great for our needs because we could point our style sheet and our map tiles directly at this editor interface to have this very Mapbox Studio-esque, you know, design environment.
I'm not very technical. I've just always been doing print maps. And so can you give me the you're at Thanksgiving dinner and explaining how the hell Gaia's map works?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is honestly like the way most of these digital maps work. It was, you know, you have a style sheet, which is made up of JSON code, and there's blocks in there, and each one of those blocks of style code represents a map layer on your map. And this editor, like Maputnik, you could essentially link it to that style sheet. So then it's listing out all your layers in a very recognizable layer menu, like you would see in Illustrator or something like that. And from there, you can click into each layer and have all these different design options that you're hoping to achieve. So like the stroke or thickness of a line, the opacity, and then also incorporating that zoom element into it. So you can actually change the look and appearance of these different layers as you're zooming in and out.
So you'd edit the JSON that would cause your styles to be applied at that. Did you work in specific zoom levels?
That's honestly how I've always tried to approach the map design, is looking at each zoom level as its own individual map and working, trying to create like the best, most usable map view at that zoom level, and then kind of working my way down until you're at those very highest zooms, like 18 or 20, and also like accounting for those transitions throughout the experience. So it definitely adds like a whole other element to cartographic design that, was new coming from print, where you're trying to just work with this one view and this one scale, and now this very dynamic world has been opened up that honestly like leaves a lot of space for creativity, because now you're not locked to cramming all this information into a single view, and you can start to more dynamically decide when certain elements will appear on the map. And there were aspects of paper maps that we kind of leaned in on to facilitate that even more, because you might not know where you should zoom in or pinch to reveal more information. So some common techniques you see on paper maps like Trails Illustrated, they would group symbols into little clusters where there might be like a dense pocket of information. So like there's a ranger station and a campground and a restroom and a trailhead at this location. So we tried to achieve a similar look to like encourage users of the map to zoom into locations where we might have more rich information for them.
Yeah, you see that clutch of little icons, and then you can push in and see like, oh, where exactly is the bathroom and the water spigot?
Yeah, exactly.
And how do you manage the transitions? I'm zooming in from like 14 to 15. Do you get to pick exactly what changes first?
Yeah, I think there definitely is that level of control, and it starts all the way back in the beginning of the stack with what you put into those map tiles and how you order things in those map tiles. And then you can also control in the style, like what sort of elements get a priority as you're transitioning from one zoom level to the next.
And when you're designing, do you start at the very highest zoom or the lowest zoom?
I guess I don't really have a specific place that I usually like to start. Maybe in the middle. I kind of started those mid zooms to come up with the overall like look and feel or color palette of the map that I'm working on, and then kind of work up and down from there.
And when you were creating this, was it just you?
That time when I was at Gaia, yes, it was just me. I was the only cartographer there, and would work a lot with another software engineer to achieve a lot of the more like complicated effects that we might be going for in the map that would require some heavier engineering to go into the map tiles. So it was often a team effort in that regard.
And once your design is all good, your JSON looks great, then all the vector tiles are stored elsewhere. And when I'm scrolling around on my phone, they're fetched?
Yep, they're fetched from that server where they're all stored in the cloud, and just the style sheet is being applied to them as your device is pulling them down.
And when you were creating this layer, were you continually updating it, or did you have versions? Like you're working on it for 6 months, looks good, and then new data comes in, refresh.
Yeah, maybe that's one of those things where cartography never feels done, because we would get it to a place I'm like, oh, this is the best map. This map could never get any better. And then three versions later, we've got what is now the next new best map that we can make. So yeah, there's versioning in that regard where we're, you know, kind of keeping a pulse on trends in the industry to come up with like new styling, or maybe there's new breaking changes that we introduced to the map tiles because we added new functionality or new data layers that requires a refresh map style to work with those. We went through several versions of the Gaia Topo map while I was working there. I think that's one of the cool parts about cartographic design in this space. It's like you can take this very cool technology that feels like it's really useful, and when you apply the right cartographic design to this data, it just makes it even more enjoyable to use and functional.
For the stage zero ingest, did you ever get to walk a trail?
A lot of our data we sourced from OSM. So I think I, you know, loosely did in that regard, where I would be going out and like adding maybe missing local trails to OpenStreetMap. And then that would eventually cascade into being in the product. So in that regard, yes, just as much as all of us are who are editing OSM to some extent.
How long were you at Gaia?
So I was at Gaia for about 4 years, I think, through the transition and acquisition to outside. It was about a year after that I had an offer from Onyx Maps to come back and lead up a new cartography team with them. And it sounded like a really great opportunity to kind of step more into this leadership space in cartography that I was interested in doing. So that's where I'm at now.
You got a team now.
Yeah, got a whole team of cartographers and an engineer, which has been really, really fun and exciting. That's been really cool to see what we can do in the less than year that I've been here now.
And are you still the art director? Like you pick the colors and strokes?
I'm trying to let go of that a little bit more, but I do still get pretty involved with our with design review, and we've been, you know, doing a pretty major redesign of all of our base maps since I've been here. So been very involved in that process, which has been really fun. It's been cool to come into a space where there wasn't a lot of cartographic focus yet and be given, you know, the room to create a design system with the help of a really strong engineer to, you know, craft the right environment for a cartography team to thrive. And it's been really cool to see what we've been able to do. And we're right on the edge of releasing our new map designs for the Onyx Backcountry app, and Off-Road and Hunt will soon be to follow.
Does Onyx have a robust feedback system from the guy stomping through the swamp? Does he ever email you and say, you sent me in the wrong direction, or there's a fence here?
Yeah, we have very, very active and passionate users that are contacting us very regularly to tell us the things that they both love about the products and the things that they would like to see better. So, and letting us know just when there are errors, like, hey, this land ownership changed and your map doesn't show the new owner yet. So, yeah, we have a lot of users out there that are helping us stay on top of this stuff.
Keeping track of ownership changes, you effectively have to duplicate the county clerk's work.
I know, right? That's what I mean. It's an really impressive task that the parcel team here handles.
Why do you need to know who the owner is for permission contacts? Or I thought it was just private public that you need to know.
I'm not a big hunter, but I will try to step into the hunter's shoes and give a good answer to this. But I think oftentimes, you know, if there's a piece of private land that you could use to access another piece of public land, or, hey, I was chasing this elk through this national forest and then it crossed onto this person's property. If you know that person, you could maybe, you know, go and like knock on their door, like ask them like, hey, are you okay with me walking through this? Or, you know, if you're planning your hunt for later that year and there's an area you would really like to explore, if you have the owner's mailing address, you could, you know, send them a letter and say, hey, would you be okay with me coming and hunting on your land? And I know, you know, that sort of thing actually does happen.
Okay, planning purposes.
Yeah, primarily planning purposes, I would say.
What's the iterative cycle with your team? Every week, oh, we change this symbology or this layer.
This whole big redesign, we've kind of been building a lot of things from the ground up, you know, redesigning all of our iconography and symbols on the map, a lot of the just the format that we have our style sheets and the JSON code. So it's been a very kind of long, robust roadmap broken into different pieces to get to this like big launch of this newly designed map. So yeah, we kind of work in like 2-week cycles where we're breaking up the work into digestible parts and kind of working through it that way.
Since you've seen everything there is to see for designing interactive maps for very high use by very spirited people, can you recall a particular challenge to you or your team?
I mean, there's been so many challenges as far as trying to work with global data and achieving like the look or feel that we're going for in a map. I mean, I remember one particular one, I guess, that I could draw back to. One of the really cool elements of the National Geographic maps were they had trail mileage markers. So like you would always know the distance between junctions on a trail. And that always felt like a really cool and like powerful element to have on a map while you're out in the field, to be able to piece these segments together and know like in to the tenth of a mile how far you have to hike to get to that lake or that campground. So that was an element we wanted to bring to the maps both here at Onyx and at Gaia, to be able to do that on a global scale where you're working with global data was a very like challenging process to create and work through in a matter that wouldn't take like weeks and weeks to run. So that's probably one of the challenges that kind of sticks out in my mind.
Weeks to run the calculations to update the whole tile set?
Yep, exactly. One of the other elements, you're always having to consider working with these maps that span such huge geographic coverage areas. When you're processing these vector tiles, how long does it take to actually build them? And if you introduce really complicated processes into that, it can really slow it down to the point that it's not feasible because you can no longer update the map at a cadence that makes sense. So the scalability factor of anything that we're trying to introduce is always one of the more challenging and important aspects of it.
Oh, I'm really beginning to see the use of a competent software engineer now.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if I can shave a few cycles off how to calculate distance between these two lines, it's like, maybe I can simplify the line first. Maybe I can not care about every twist and turn. Let's not stress our computing cluster.
Exactly.
Man, that's so much more to worry about than cartographic design. I mean, all that to hold in your head, and especially in AFT manage, too.
It is. I know, that's why all the folks on my team have, you know, their job titles are technical cartographers. They're not just regular cartographers. It's a much more technical space that kind of starts to blend into the world of software engineering and design, which is cool. It's also, it definitely introduces a whole new challenging element to cartography.
Is your team cartographers who learned to code or computer guys who wanted to make maps?
I would say probably cartographers learning to code is the larger makeup. There's maybe a couple folks in there that I could say pull at it from the other angle.
And how many do you have under you now?
5 cartographers and one senior engineer.
Wow, 5 cartographers.
Yeah, we have a big team, but we also have 3 different apps that we're creating maps for. So I'm very glad we have the folks that we have. So Backcountry is the first map, or the first app that we've done this major base map redesign work for. And that should be coming out really soon. And then we're shifting our focus to the Onyx off-road app and hoping to target sometime this fall for that. And then the big one, Onyx Hunt, will follow soon after that.
Looking at this big patch of wilderness and trying to design maps for navigating it safely on foot, on road, chasing elk across it, and not getting in trouble with with anyone. So many different uses on the same patch. Does your off-road layer include stuff like safe grade? There's a tipping risk here.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you asked that question because I think it's been one of the really fun challenges of working at Onyx and having these different products instead of trying to make a map that does work for all of those use cases that you just mentioned. We can really create a map that hones in on that particular user's focus area. So Onyx Backcountry, like, we can really focus the design of the map and the visual hierarchy of the content on somebody that's going backpacking or hiking or backcountry skiing. Whereas Onyx off-road, it's so much more about the motorized trails and the roads and how to, you know, safely pick your routes through. It's like really rough terrain that you're driving on, knowing where you can go and drive off-road, where there's dispersed camping, versus the hunter who's primarily navigating off-trail and needs to really know where they stand at all times from an ownership perspective.
Do these have entirely separate data ingest pipelines or projects? Off-road, it's like, okay, well, I start with the public land OHV map.
It depends. There are some shared like elements between all three, and then there are some things that end up having to be sourced kind of independently. And for Onyx off-road, that's something like that one. It's primarily, you know, the motorized roads and trails that is something that's really just special to that product compared to the other two.
Does Onyx have any plans, or does it have right now, like, user-contributed data? Rockfall here.
Yeah, I think just this year we introduced new means of users contributing that kind of content via the app. They can fill out trail reports for different, like, roads or hiking trails that they travel on. Yeah, we're really excited to see what we can do with that kind of information cartographically to expose it on the map. But that's more future iterations and fun areas we get to explore.
Have you ever had something that you dumped a few months of work into and had to abandon?
I can't say I've had something that I've had to dump several months into. There's definitely been some projects where you maybe dedicate a few days or maybe a couple weeks worth of work that you've ended up having to leave. And those are always painful, but I feel like they almost always have some kind of a silver lining where there's at least a learning experience from having gone through that work, or you find a way to use pieces of it later down the road. I'll go back to working at Gaia. There was a project we did there where we were designing some in-dash maps for a car manufacturer. And the deal, and they ended up kind of going our separate ways, and they ended up not wanting to utilize, or they didn't want to use the Gaia platform in their navigation. But the all the work that we had put in cartographically to like build this map that for this vehicle use, we ended up being able to take a lot of that work, and it went into what ended up becoming the Gaia Overland base map, which was a base map specifically designed for folks out exploring backcountry roads and that whole the overlanding community.
Whoever commissioned the project back out, but you got to salvage all the design work.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have any advice for, say, a print cartographer trying to make his maps move?
I mean, obviously my biggest advice would just be explore the technology that's there, because there's so much that is just free and open source, and it's there's a lot of opportunities to just learn this new medium if you want to, if it's a space you're interested in getting into. And yeah, learn as much as you can about what full stack cartography means, because lots of different organizations are doing it differently, but there's some pretty like common coding languages out there like Python and SQL that are pretty widely utilized in this field.
Where do I find the people talking about full stack cartography?
Stamen Designs, I know. I've heard they were on the Mapscaping podcast, not to plug another podcast while I'm talking to you, but they did have an episode specifically about full stack cartography, I believe. So that would be a great intro to understanding what that world means. It's kind of a niche area of cartography still.
Just thinking about how the technology has advanced, where you could be your own base map designer. Before, only Google and Bing had that.
Exactly. Yeah, Google and Apple Maps eventually too. But yeah, it feels like it's a much more accessible space for other people and other cartographers to be getting into now.
And your team, is there a division? I have a good designer who's also technically competent, but they don't touch the back end that much, or I have a back end person who just doesn't touch the design, or are they totally mixed?
We're trying to have every one of them develop that full stack cartography skill set so that everybody would be capable of touching the necessary pieces in the back end as well as be a competent designer. So we don't really have, you know, siloed areas of expertise in that regard.
And since you've been so deep into the print and the technical cartography for so long, you got a preference? Time to pick a side, Lee.
I'm really happy with the career direction I've chosen to work in this medium, because the challenges are really fun and really satisfying. But I do miss the print side of things, and I try to pick it up on occasion just for my own personal interests. Gotten into trying to do some hand-drawn maps from watching Sarah Bell's techniques, and occasionally trying to make a nice wall map that I can hang on the wall, although since having kids, neither of those things happen as frequently as I was like, but still definitely a passion for the print. It's nice to be able to just kind of try to hone that perfect view of a map that you're going for.
Did you post any of those projects? I want to see your wall map and your pencil relief.
I should. I have some on my, you know, my portfolio website. I'll be sure to send that to you so you can link it in if you want. And you know, I've posted on the platform formerly known as Twitter a few times with different map views, like the hand drawn technique, or yeah, some just nice like print maps. And I have one in there, Wrangell St. Elias National Park in Alaska.
Do you ever use them? I really like my local Idaho public lands. I'm going to make my beautiful map.
Again, I feel like I have a lot of pipe dreams to doing more of these kind of things, but I haven't yet. I think that's where I get to kind of pull in a lot of my own personal interests into my real work, where I'm lucky enough to get to be building things that I actually do want to go out and use myself. That selfish element probably influences a lot of the design, but I feel very lucky in that regard.
And are there any cartographers that you look to for inspiration?
The one that you just had on your last episode, which I can't believe I have to follow Tom Patterson on this, but he's obviously a great one that I'm sure a lot of folks know. I've followed Sarah Bell a lot. I feel like she's done some really cool stuff developing her own fonts and a lot of the hand-drawn techniques that she's shared with folks. She's somebody that I follow a lot. The Trails Illustrated group out of Colorado, definitely put in a plug for them, because they're always doing some pretty cool stuff. And I feel like a lot of their design has, you know, trickled into outdoor recreation maps in general that you see, and things like these digital maps that Onyx and Gaia are building, and a lot of other even print-based maps out there. I feel like they share a lot of common design themes.
Any specific names in Colorado you want to shout out?
No, David Lambert, he's been leading that team for forever, and he's a great one. I know he's always around in the NASIS crowd, too, for folks that like to attend that conference. And there's a really talented cartographer on my team, too, Kate LaRue, who has presented a lot at NASIS and formerly worked at Stamen Designs. And I'd say she's been fairly influential in this field as well.
I always tell people it's an order of magnitude more difficult to make pretty maps that people can actually touch and ask questions of. All the maps I make, the PNG is law. You want a different view? That's a new billing problem.
It is challenging, but it's fun. It's creating these maps that have that utility purpose that, you know, somebody's going to be holding in their hand to accomplish their objective while also trying to make it look as nice and pretty as you can. So it's an interesting balance to strike.
Maps that, one, are more difficult to put together. Two, have a lot more failure modes as people poke and prod at them. And three, that people are actually using for navigation. I've never made a map that people would actually use for that. They're educational purposes only.
I try not to think too much about how people might be putting their lives in the hands of the map and depending on it for navigation and life or death scenarios. I'm sure that happens, but it's...
That reminds me, for a guy, Aronix has, you know, counsel ever said, are you really sure about this data? Because what they're going to do with it is kind of dangerous, like, especially for off-roading.
I know. Well, honestly, I think like that more comes into play with things like when you're creating maps for backcountry ski navigation and we're doing things like trying to do slope angle shading on the mountains, for example, so that somebody could know which areas are most likely to slide in avalanche danger. And that does feel like you're getting into like a tricky space to work in, because you don't want to like give the impression like this is safe, this isn't safe, because you're totally at the mercy of the resolution of your data at that point to say like what is actually on the ground. So yeah, I think that's, you know, I wouldn't say we've gotten into like legal gray areas with that, but it's more around the education that you provide to users and the way that you word things and the layering and description of these maps to make sure that people do realize it's just another tool in the toolbox and not something to put their life on the line with.
Is that communicated in the actual design? Do you have a little pop-up that says data updated as of blank, resolution limited by blank, or modal? You have to click accept. This avalanche slope data is pretty coarse, so don't rely on it.
Yeah, no, I think it goes a lot into like the description and even the way that you want to like word the name of the layer. Like you could just call it slope angle instead of saying like avalanche danger. And so it's like the user, you can turn that on. And it's a slope angle map, so you can use it for a lot of different, in a lot of different ways. Like maybe somebody wants to use that for hiking to be able to tell where the steep terrain is if they don't want to read contours. Or, you know, hunters like to lay it over aerial imagery to be able to tell where the steep terrain is when they don't have, you know, contours. So I think there's so many different use cases for it that you can kind of treat it as more of a generic layer, even though you know that people are using it for things like getting into avalanche terrain.
A neutral word that makes you think of geometry.
Yeah, exactly.
Not getting buried under snow.
Yeah, exactly. Try to keep it a little more neutral.
Again, so many more things to worry about than static cartography. Interactive navigational cartography that people pay for.
Yeah, just try not to think too hard about these things, I guess.
Since you've been top dog at Gaia and Onyx, who do you go to for advice?
I've got no one, though. No, just kidding. I mean, when it comes to cartographic work, I know I don't really have like somebody that I can go to get that sort of device or that advice and input from. It's more just really looking at what others are doing in the field and in the industry and kind of trying to learn from them, from what I can see as examples out in the field.
I think Gaia and Onyx are the only two real high design navigation maps. Are there any other apps? Is there some like obscure Patagonian or French company that does this too?
You know, not that I know of. I would definitely say that we're kind of like leading that space as far as the cartography is concerned. You know, there's other apps out there that are used for that, like those kind of navigational purposes, but I wouldn't say that they've put the focus on cartography like we have.
You're in truly unique space. You are truly out over your skis on this one.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Well, I want to thank you so much, and I'll let you get on with your very busy day managing the team.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fun to get to chat. Have a good one. Bye.
You can see Lee's work at onxmaps.com. That's onxmaps.com. And leefrance.me. For show notes and bonus content, visit veryexpensivemaps.com. This episode is brought to you by The Map Consultancy, supplier of professional, data-driven maps for your decks, reports, walls, and events. Visit themapconsultancy.com to see what good maps can do for you. I'm Evan Applegate. I'm a cartographer, and you should make your own maps.
No one wants to see dull, ugly maps. If you want to get through to your customers, you need the best cartography money can buy. The Map Consultancy will create maps with your data and your branding, PowerPoint decks, annual reports, conferences and events, your office walls. The Map Consultancy does it all. Visit themapconsultancy.com and get the best maps today.